So we're on the second part of the steps we took on step 11 by Joe McHugh. I really find that if you wanted, you could use this book to sponsor somebody because it follows the big book and it goes through the steps, and some people have. Joe didn't write this book. Three people visited with him and listened to him talk about the steps, and then they were writers, so they were able to put it together in a way that's really powerful. And tonight we're on page 137 of this handout. We only did a few pages last week. I did some thoughts on the value of step 11. You can find that on the site experiencethebigbook.org, and we put that out, and it's one of the last episodes. He talks about step 3 and 11 are the two pillars of the steps. We make a decision in step 3, and then how we follow and receive God's direction is in step 11. Step 11 was essential to the people who started this fellowship. Quiet time was absolutely essential. They only had one meeting a week, but they had quiet time every day. And so I've tried to develop a better means of prayer meditation, but I follow the big book like Joe talks about here, and then I incorporate the St. Francis prayer, and I meditate on pages 84 to 88, and always seeking other sources of information to read, spiritual. I read some other things as well. It's an individual thing. Nobody does it perfectly. The idea is to do it with humility and do it consistently. And so he talks about the four pillars of prayer meditation. The big book is very specific, pages 86 to 88, and they talk about night, morning, indecision, and prayer. And he calls these valuable suggestions. I think if you study and meditate on these four things, your days will be really good. We start at night, and that's the first full paragraph on page 86. But he follows it in this review. And the nighttime review, now some people you'll hear talk about, they do a nightly review as part of step 10. But step 10 is the inventory during the day, the spot check inventory, to find where we're separated from the big guy and how we get back to the big guy so we're at peace. And at night is the nighttime review. And they start the instructions with nighttime. Now, why didn't they start it in the morning? Well, they know we're alcoholics, so they know we need to look at our day and clear our mind at night if we have any chance in the morning. So you do your nightly review, and then hopefully, if you follow these instructions, when you wake up in the morning, the things that were bothering you and troubling you the night before are not as powerful. And we're going to see you ask God's forgiveness and his direction of how we can correct these things. And if you go to sleep and meditate on that in the morning, things have usually changed. So he says night relates to what we do at night. I guess he's writing alcoholics. So nighttime is the nightly review. And he says, I think every person who's trying to develop a spiritual life, and that's what we're trying to do, a spiritual life, not a self-centered life. And I want to congratulate the birthdays again. They're fantastic. And very powerful things that both of you said. And that was such a great testimony to what the program can do. We do a nightly review. One effective thing about a nightly review is that it gives evidence of what we have on a hand that's fresh in our minds. And the one thing that I do the nightly review at night, and I find that it really helps me. It says we should not get in remorse, worry, or morbid reflection. And all of us do things during the day that we think we could have done better. And when you do this, it's kind of a way of stop beating yourself if you did something and you would change what you did. And then you ask God's forgiveness. And if when we ask, remember, in this big book, ask is a petition of prayer that we expect, and so we have God's forgiveness. And then I ask what corrective measures. And then I used to ask, help me see what corrective measures are. But I think what they want me to do is let go of my thoughts on this, and God will give me the corrective measures. Open my mind to receive his guidance in meditation, which is a different thing. And it says, our future is unknown. Now, that I don't know if that's true, because a lot of us think we know the future, so we get afraid of it. Anybody else do that here? and we can plan. An alcoholic can sit in the basement, nobody in the room, and plan the whole future. And it's always bad. Alcoholics never see the future as good. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know about you, but I know the future for me. I had always concocted some crazy scenario, you know, and it didn't make any sense. And now I just learned not to pay attention to it. But we have current evidence of what happened today. And what we're doing is, since the disease centers in our mind, we're looking at night what our thought life was during the day, and our thought life is reflected in our actions. As we said, our thinking is our life. And we can look at today and see what the results of my thinking have been for today. What were the results? And they ask us, we ask a question, where was I selfish, dishonest, fearful, or self-centered, or dishonest? And those are the questions we're supposed to ask every night. And if we have those, that type of thinking, we look at the results. And they're usually not good. And it says, as we do this each day, we can see things we need to change. And you're really looking at your thought life. We can see each day that we have and will always have two forces in our lives, self-will and God's will. And I know I'm going to get this wrong, but don't the Indians have the saying that there are two dogs, and which is the dog you feed? And that dog that you feed is the dog that's going to control your life. Who are you feeding? Who are you feeding? Are you feeding your self-will or God's will? I always know when I'm feeding self-will, I don't feel good. I'm disturbed. Things bother me. I'm having negative thinking, judgment. And I heard this thing, and it's a very powerful talk. And the guy says, where do we want to live? Why do we choose to live in Topeka? Why don't we live in New York? And he talked about Miami. And he said, Miami, it's expensive. There's crime. Everybody has to lock their door, lock their cars. Traffic everywhere. Taxes are unbelievable. And he had a son move to Greensboro, North Carolina. He says it's cheap there. Nobody locks their door. There's no traffic. And why does he live in Miami and not in Greensboro? Well, what does that have to do with AA? Well, he's talking about the third step. And then he talked about, he saw this movie. It was Signs, and Mel Gibson was this priest who had lost his faith. And he says that the people live lives where they believe that they're alone. They believe that they're running the show, that there's no God, there's no purpose to anything. Everything's random chance. You either have good luck or bad. And that when you die alone. And that this is all there is. And he says, if you live that way, you're in constant fear. Think about it. He says, now there's other people who believe that there is a creator. They believe that there's hope, that they believe there's their power they can rely on, and that they can live with that power, and that they're never alone. So he says, where would you rather live? And you see, as alcoholics, at least for myself, I chose to live in disharmony with God rather than harmony with God. I chose to live separated from God. And I was full of fear. And so I don't want to choose that way anymore. He says the third step decision is deciding, do you want to live in harmony with God? Do you want to live in a place of hope where there's some, we read it tonight, we agnostics, where people have a purpose to their lives that makes sense? Or do you want to live separated and in fear? And that's really the choice that we have when we get to step three. And in step 11, we're choosing to live in that relationship with the power greater than ourselves, and we're trying to improve it through prayer and meditation and get his constant power and direction. And so if you do that, you see how your life goes. And the more you do prayer and meditation, the better your life goes, because the more you have access to the power. So I really like that. So each night, it says, reading again back to the thing, we can check to see how God's direction is growing in our lives. What I can actually see each night is, where did I block God? Where did I block God out by self-will? And so some days we'll find that self-will has caused us problems, and some days we'll see that God's will has been working in our lives. No day are we ever going to be perfect, and no day are we going to be completely on one side or the other. That's true for me. I try not to stay disturbed very long anymore. And I try not to stay in fear and anger because I don't like it. I don't feel good. And I can't have any purpose or be of service to anybody when I'm in that way. And says, if we neglect to do this little nightly review, we're not going to know where we are. And the chances are we're going to go to forget where we came from and where we're going. And the other thing I wrote is that I'm able to resolve negative feelings towards myself through doing this nightly review. I don't have to beat myself up. We're always going to be on the left or right side. None of the days are perfect. The thing is, I'm willing to look at it and ask for corrective measures. And it says in one of the lines in the nightly review in the book is, what should I have done instead? Was I thinking of myself all the time, or were I thinking of what I could pack into the stream of life? And so it's very powerful. It doesn't take long at all. These three things are very important, he talks about, in the business of living. Knowing where we came from, knowing where we are now, and knowing where we are going. And the nightly review allows us to keep up with these on a daily basis. If we do the nightly review and do it honestly, we'll see things we need to work on. And the thing I wrote here, I'm going to work on it with God. I'm not going to fix myself. I'm going to need God's direction to help me change. But I have to be willing to change and willing to let go. And this is basically 6 and 7 all day long and at night. We know we're never going to be perfect, but we'll continue to make progress and stay on the road we want to be on. Practicing this one valuable suggestion alone would change our lives completely. And the road we want to be on is, what path are we following? Are we on the path that they follow to God and to spiritual contact with God, or we get off the path? So at night we could see which path we were on and try to get back onto the right path. And so when you go to sleep, you should have a really positive view of things instead of a negative view. And in fact, he writes in the 12 of 12, after you do this, your mind should be at peace and you should be able to just go right to sleep and not carry anything with you. If we do the nightly review and do it honestly, we see the things we need to work on. I wrote that, and we stay on the road. Practicing this one valuable suggestion alone would change our lives completely. Well, you know why I think he says that? If you're doing this at night, you're admitting humility. You're admitting you need God's power. You're admitting you need God's direction. You want to be willing to change. You want to be willing to grow, and you want to be the person God created. And so that's a reminder of our humility, and that's why prayer and meditation is really a form of humility, seeking to be the person God created. And it says they're going to look at all four suggestions they put into the day. I wrote some other results of the nightly review. You get self-forgiveness. You learn to forgive others. You learn where you need to make amends. You can resolve your negative feelings, and you can get a vision of God's will for you. I mean, what could be better than that? It only takes 5 minutes, doesn't it? Some people write it out. If you're new, you may want to write it out. Maybe I should write it. I'll have to think about it. But it's something that I do. And in the morning, anybody wake up in the morning? All right, in the morning is in the AM. You see they have AM because it's in alcoholics. And morning is in the morning. Morning deals with what we do in the morning. I mean, Joe had a good sense of humor. When we get up in the morning, we ask God to direct our lives that day. Does anybody do that? The lines in the big book on page 86 are very powerful. It says, when we arise, we think of our plans for the day. Anybody do that? It says, before you begin that, wait, don't do that. Ask God to direct your thinking and divorce your thinking from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. So what they're telling me very powerfully, and I remember to try to do this every morning, is that if my plans for the day have the wrong motives, and if my plans for the day aren't following God's directions, they're not going to be good plans. And then they tell you if you follow through on that, your thought life will be placed on a better basis. And our thought life determines our action life, right? It says we ask God to direct our lives that day. This is not going back and making the decision to step 3 every day. We do this instead to remind ourselves of our commitment each day, and I wrote to God's direction. And it's a form of humility. It means when you wake up and you do that, then I know of myself I'm nothing and I can't run the show. And I need help. And it doesn't take long to do. He says, most people get up each morning prepared to meet the material world. They take a shower, we hope they do, brush their teeth, shave or put on makeup, fix their hair, dress carefully, eat breakfast, lock their houses, rush off and have turmoil and confusion in their lives all day. Anybody relate to that? So he says, I wonder how much better, how much greater our lives could be if we spent as much time preparing our minds each day as we spend preparing our clothes. Well, one of the things I do in the morning is I pray on giving on the way of love, patience, tolerance, kindness. I pray on God's, what I believe would be God's vision for me that day, how I should be. I ask him to remind me when I get resentful, feel for dishonest, self-seeking, or inconsiderate, that I need to turn away from that and turn towards him. There's a lot of ways you can do this. I find if you just meditate on 84 to 88, it's really good. Good stuff. They do say on page 83, before the promises, it says each morning we meditate on God showing us the way of love, patience, kindness, and tolerance. And I don't think you can ever go wrong if you're practicing that each day. It says, how much time do I spend with God in the morning? How much time do I spend with me? And then I think if I don't spend much time with God, sometimes I'll remind myself of that an hour later when I start the day and I say, you know, I need to go back and pray and get God centered. And you know, they talk about, Joe and Charlie do the tapes, you know, you spend a lot of time getting ready and then you give God 3 minutes or 30 seconds. He says, I know how well my car would run if I treat it with the same neglect that I do my mind. And I disagree with that. I think that's an incorrect statement because I don't neglect my mind. I spend a lot of time with my mind, but I neglect turning my mind over to God. And so I do neglect the care of my mind, to put my mind in God's care. And it wouldn't get me across town if I didn't take care of it. I never go without changing the oil or doing what needs to be done or keep that car going. We often don't take the same care with our lives. Well, one of the things I thought of, we all put gas in the car, right? We know it's not going to run empty. So why don't we do the same thing with our thought life and spend some time in prayer and meditation? It's like putting gas in the car each day. And so it says if we simply ask God to direct our thinking in the morning, preparing myself to stay close to God, I wrote, and asking God his prayer, we would be more mindful of his directions all day long. If we ask God to keep our thinking free from wrong motives, we can live better lives. Tapping into this inner resource of strength each day. Remember it says we tap an unsuspected inner resource. It's unsuspected because we never used it. But once we start using it, we know it's there. And some people in this room, I know they do daily prayer meditation. They can talk about that when we open it up. And we want to tap into that. God can direct our lives in many ways that we are capable of. We can only see so far. Though our vision, through our vision, we cannot see the things that lie ahead. We may think we do, and then we have fear, right? We know from the experience of traveling on self-will how we can direct our lives into a lot of catastrophes. Anybody agree with that? That's your whole fourth step. And you can do it when you're sober years, like people have said. How long you're physically sober won't keep you, tell you don't need to do this every day. It's a continuous program of recovery. Remember what I did yesterday for recovery won't help me today. Now it'll help me to remind myself to do this today. But if I don't do anything that day, then I don't have any power in my life. He says, I love the passage in the Bible that says, thou shalt not be afraid of the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flieth by day, nor for the pestilence that walketh in the darkness, nor for the destruction that wasteth at noonday. Can you imagine being out in a field with thousands of arrows coming at you? God can direct us through those arrows. We can't. God can direct us through arrows and pestilence. And you know, I think what happens to me is I see arrows, but they're not really there. They're there. I create the arrows in my mind with the fear and with my self-centeredness. And when I get back to God, I don't see the arrows. They disappear. And so that's been a great gift. As we practice the nightly review and the morning meditation, we become more skilled at them. These things will become the pillars of our day. We're only talking about a few minutes a night and a few minutes a morning given to our spiritual health. He says, think what our lives would be like if we practiced this. If we just spent 5 minutes a night reviewing and 5 minutes in the morning asking God to direct our lives through the arrows. Then he says we would have 23 hours and 50 minutes to mess up and run the show ourselves. But we would still be a lot better off. And I think if you do this in the morning, you're more capable of seeing where you're off the beam during the day. You see, you ask God to direct your thinking, and he can give us, discipline us when we start getting off the beam. Most people think of prayer meditation taking hours and hours of sitting around, chanting, all this stuff. But we're talking, and he says, alcoholics, we're very busy people. We don't have a lot of time for this. Because, you know, we are important. He says, most of us are active people, and this is a simple thing that we can put into our lives without a lot of difficulty. I think the greatest thing about doing prayer in the morning is it's a form of humility that I need God's power. You're admitting you're an alcoholic. You cannot manage your own life. It gives us strength to live by. Now, we don't want to live by my strength anymore, right? I want to live by God's strength. And then he talks about indecision. I'll just cover a little bit of it, and then I'll open it up. The third value suggestion deals with indecision. Now, why'd they put indecision in there? Because I was never indecisive before I got in the program. And if I didn't know what to do, I would feel bad about myself, and I would seek to resolve it right away. But I face indecision, and I remind myself now when I have things that I don't know what the right action is, I say this prayer. But the meditations in the morning is to, when we have face indecision, to be able to ask God to direct my thinking and turn it over to God. It says we don't always have the knowledge or the understanding or the capacity to handle things that come up throughout the day, and that's very true. And I think I get that knowledge of that I don't know what the right thing is by staying close to God. If we could just realize and accept the fact that we're human, we've been a good place to start handling decisions. I know it worked really well in my profession. There were things that would come up all the time. And then I'd say, well, I have to handle this right now. And then I constantly would say, no, I don't need to do this now. I would put it down. I'd say, God, I'm putting this down. You'll give me the right thought or action later. I need to do the thing that's in front of me now. And that way I could be more effective at the thing that was in front of me now. And then when I got to that thing, it'd be surprising how I could see it differently. If I see to fix something and make a decision when I'm stressed or my mind isn't in serenity, like the serenity prayer, then I won't know what to change and I won't know what to accept. If we could realize and accept the fact that we're human, we'd be in a good place to start handling decisions. It's all right not to know everything. Most of us allow ourselves to get frustrated because we feel we should know how to deal with everything and how to answer every question that comes along. I think for most of us, that's the way we lived before we came here. We have to realize the limitations we have. Human life is so short. We are here on Earth for such a comparatively short period of time that it's impossible for us to know any significant part of what there is to know. At the same time, we have to believe that even though we're here for a short period of time, we're here to play a certain role. Now, this is important because it says in step 3 that if we stay close to God and we stay close to him by doing prayer meditation and we play the role he assigns, then he will provide everything I need. And so if we play a certain role and we've been equipped with enough information ability to do it, if we can accept our role, which a lot of times we don't, we think we should have a different role, and realize we're going to run into things in our lives that we don't understand or have any answer for, then we can turn these things over to God and ask for right and orderly direction. And remember, good orderly direction, you hear that a lot at meetings? Well, it depends who's giving me the directions. If it's me, I don't know what good orderly direction is, and that's the whole purpose of the program, is to have God to give me the right thought. And it says in the big book, if a mere code of morals or philosophy was better, we would have recovered. We wouldn't have gotten the mess we were in. And so I have to remind myself that I always don't know what the right thing is, and that's what the set-aside prayer is. You realize that God probably has a million answers to every problem I have. Since he can see all and knows all, he can direct my life through and around these things. So things that we make, like we make mouse turds into these mountains and we pole vault over them, God could probably direct me around the mouse turd and it doesn't have to be pole vaulted over. He also has a covenant with me, and this is powerful. He's given me self-will. He gave me self-will. And he will allow me to struggle on the basis of self-will when I insist. But when I realize this is happening, if I choose to, I can turn over the problem to God, relax, take it easy, and not struggle. So I wrote here, I have to turn really everything to God. And I'm just going to read a couple more lines because they tie together. I hope you'll let me. I can turn any decision over to God and go on with my life. That's true, isn't it? I have to realize it when I don't have the answer to a problem. I have to admit and turn it over to God. And I think if I had more indecision and less decision, my life would go better. And I would become free of the frustration. I still haven't solved the problem, but as long as I'm wrestling with indecision, I can't solve that problem or handle anything else in my life. Now, what does that mean? I thought, if I'm wrestling with indecision, that means I'm in a state of disturbance. And if I'm doing that, I really can't solve or handle any problems because I'm blocked from God. And then that problem or indecision dominates my life. And it dominates my thinking. The confusion will have jammed my computer and I won't be able to do anything else. And I'm just going to read this last line because this is the whole program. It says, when I let go of the problem, I don't have to solve the problem, but I free myself for other things. And that's like Sandy Beach says, the whole program is letting go. When am I going to let go? And at the big book, it says we turn away from the things that are bothering ourselves and turn our thoughts to what? Those we can help. Turn my thoughts away from me and what I'm stewing or indecisive over and turn it away to God. And then I'll make better decisions. My life will go better. So I'm going to stop there and then we'll pick up with that. This chapter is just fantastic amount of information. But we have a big crowd tonight, and I want to give people a chance to share. So thank you.